Hello and welcome to the Scottish Housing News podcast with myself, Kieran Finlay, the editor of Scottish Housing News, and my co-host, Jimmy Black. In May 2019, Glasgow City Council issued a tender to establish an alliance partnership which would work together with the council to transform homelessness services. 9 months later, the Glasgow Alliance to End Homelessness was born. The first in its kind in the UK, the Alliance brings together the Health and Social Care Partnership, third sector and independent organisations, and crucially, local people with personal experience of homelessness, all with a mission to eradicate homelessness in the city by 2030. To lead the transformation, the Alliance has appointed a new director, Jack Riley, and he joins us now. Hi Jack, and welcome to the podcast, and congratulations on the new role.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me today.
At time of recording, I believe this is very early days for you. Was it just this week you took up the position?
It was Monday, so we're on day 2.5 of a busy induction week, so it's good.
How have you settled in, and what have the first 2.5 days looked like?
I've settled in well, actually. The team have been lovely. I've met some of the Alliance leadership team already. Had lots of conversations, and I've had my first kind of external meeting with a partner as well. So it's been a really kind of fruitful first few days.
Jack, Jimmy Black here. People working in homelessness may know you from your time at the homelessness charity The Rock Trust. You dealt with young people, but you've held positions in various different care and community settings, I understand. Do you want to tell us about some of those? And I guess you'll be drawing much of that diverse background in your new role.
Oh, definitely. I think that's one of my key strengths, is just the amount of different experiences I've had across a number of sectors. So I started way back when I was 16 years old, and I worked with children and young people who had additional support needs, learning disabilities. I moved into residential childcare from that, and worked in both residential and community settings for children, again, with additional support needs. And then off to residential childcare for children with social, emotional, behavioural needs as well, and worked in there for a while, and progressed on through that through a number of different positions and into through care and aftercare. And then obviously at that point really became quite aware of the issues that lots of care experienced young people have moving into independent adulthood, and the kind of challenges around housing. And then took a kind of a strange step, but one that I feel has been a brilliant one, went off to SQA, the Qualifications Authority, and worked in there in business development and in qualifications management. And that gave me a huge amount of experience across partnership working, quite difficult kind of political exposure at points as well. So a lot of kind of new skills and working with very different people from very different backgrounds. And then from there back to Rock Trust again. And obviously, as you mentioned there, that's a youth homelessness charity. And so I have a lot of experience there in terms of working with quite specific issues that young people face within the homelessness context. So a real kind of diverse background that I'm very proud of. And for me, you know, the main reason that I've been appointed at the Glasgow Alliance isn't so much my homelessness experience as my kind of diverse experience in leadership and strategic change. And those are the kind of key qualities and key kind of attributes I think a leader in the Alliance needs at the moment. And no one person, I would say, has complete expertise over the field of homelessness, and that's why it takes an alliance to try and deal with these kind of chronic and ingrained issues. And so for me, a lot of it's about working with a vast kind of array of different stakeholders, building lots of different relationships, asking very difficult questions, and trying to push things through that sometimes might not be universally popular. So those are the kind of key skills I hope I bring to the role.
What makes the Glasgow Alliance so unique, and can you outline what you believe are its main challenges?
Yeah, I think the main uniqueness of it, well, there's a few of them, but first and foremost, Glasgow City Council realised that they had an issue with homelessness in the city, and I think that, you know, we need to offer cap to the City Council for doing something very bold and innovative. And I think the main uniqueness is in the title of it. It's an alliance of organisations. Now, I think in the sector, there are times when we partner together, and that's really good and very fruitful, and it can bring a lot of advantages. But there are also times when these partners compete against each other, and a lot of time and resource and energy goes into competing for contracts. And local authorities, I appreciate, are under huge budgetary constraints, have a value focus. And so the competition can sometimes be a little bit of a race to the bottom in terms of who can deliver that service the most cost efficiently. Now, cost efficiency doesn't always mean quality. And so I think there's real challenges there in terms of how we commission services. So the Glasgow Alliance is looking to do things differently, and it's a lot more about collaboration. We're not going to compete against each other. We're going to use all the skills and capabilities of all these various organisations, and we're going to work together, and we're going to work together to end homelessness in Glasgow. And so I think that's the main uniqueness of it. Now, does that mean to say that there's not going to be challenges and at times that there's not going to be arguments or disagreements? Of course not. We're going to have all these bumps in the road. We're dealing with human beings, and human beings are incredibly challenging across whatever role that you work with. So there's going to be those challenges there. But that's the kind of main unique area that the Alliance stands out in, is a pure collaboration.
I mean, that sounds wonderful, but all of these organisations are funded probably by the Scottish Government or by the Council. And when it comes to that time of the year when they're all trying to get next year's funding in, that's going to be a time of competition. I mean, you can't help that. How are you going to cope with that?
Yeah, I think that's a really fair question to ask. And I think, you know, the Alliance is a collaboration of lots of different organisations, but I don't answer to any one organisation. I answer to the Alliance leadership team as a whole, and the Alliance leadership team needs to work in consensus. So basically no decision is agreed unless every member around that table agrees to it. And that's very different to even a standard charity with a standard trustee board, where usually it's the majority can kind of pass things. This is consensus driven. So I think that is one area where that's going to not stop, but limit the amount of independent thinking, I would say, on the Alliance leadership team. I think the second thing is that, I lead the Alliance core team, and we're very set on a mission to end homelessness in Glasgow. And that means that we won't stand for any individual member, you know, putting themselves forward or in front of other partners. You know, at the end of the day, this is about what's best for people. And we need to think differently. We need to act differently. So every decision that we take is about what we believe through service user involvement, through things like GIFT, you know, Glasgow Homelessness Involvement Feedback Team, etc. They're a fundamental part of the decision-making of the Alliance. They are on the Alliance leadership team and represented. And our decisions are based on what is best for people, and that being fed in through areas like GIFT, etc. So decision-making is always going to be challenging. There are always going to be disagreements, I think. There are going to absolutely be challenging conversations. People are going to be pushed out of their comfort zone. People will lose services, including in the Alliance leadership team, I think, as well. You know, all services under the scope of the Alliance are going to be recommissioned through the Alliance, and they're going to be redesigned. And the reason they need to be redesigned is because things are not working at the moment. And so there's some hard truths and hard realities. And it's my responsibility as the Alliance Director to facilitate those discussions and to deal with any of the challenges, et cetera, and just to push forward. And so I think my time at Rock Trust, and hopefully my colleagues will agree with you, was one of a relentless drive forward. We needed to modernise, we needed to push forward, and we needed to innovate. And I feel like I achieved a great deal in my time at Rock Trust through that constant focus on just moving forward. And that's what I'm going to do with the Alliance. And like I said, that means that things will change. You know, for me, there will be a great personal failure if we get to 2030 and things still look the same and people still have the same contracts and we're still doing the same thing and still working with the same people. Then that's what's the point in doing all of this? You know, there needs to be a fundamental change. And I hope, and through my kind of contact with the Alliance leadership team so far, that is very much their opinion as well. And they're all on board with that. So in that regard, I don't think there's any difference of opinion. And I think the other kind of area that is going to be a bit of a challenge is Glasgow City Council themselves. And they've been very innovative in terms of putting out to tender the Glasgow Alliance. But they also at some point need to let go of the commissioning reins and allow the Alliance to take over that. And that's a very difficult transition because there's lots of people involved. There's a lot of legal complexity involved in it. As you can imagine, these are multi-million pound contracts, a lot of legacy providers, etc., that the council has been used to managing and commissioning for a number of years. And so in the council, there needs to be fundamental changes and shifts in attitudes and thinking. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. And I hope it's also not a surprise, but a lot of local authorities are quite old-fashioned and it takes time for them. They're big tankers in the sea and it takes a lot of time for them to stop or turn around. And we need to have patience, but we also need to say that it's not acceptable to take a decade to do things or to make change in certain areas when it could be achieved much quicker and much more effectively in the private sector, for instance.
Good stuff.
So those are things I think are going to be the main challenges.
So bringing us on to the current homelessness situation in Glasgow, over the last year the City Council received more than 7,000 homeless applications. The caseload for the homelessness services in terms of applications at the end of June was around 4,600, while there are almost 3,000 households in temporary accommodation. So not an easy task by any means. What are your first steps to tackle numbers like these?
I think the first step is acknowledging that it's not acceptable. You know, this isn't something that anybody should be happy about, and that should give anybody the kick up the bum that they need to work and work quickly to fix it. I think in terms of my first tasks, it's about establishing relationships with a lot of different people, because like I said previously, this is systemic change and there are so many different components within the system in Glasgow and within Scotland and the UK, etc., around housing and homelessness. And no one organisation can achieve this on its own. And even the Alliance, when it can't achieve it on its own, it will need to rely on partners. It needs to have a link in with health, with education, with drug and alcohol services, etc. So a lot of it is about relationships and managing relationships with lots of different organisations and trying to sell them an innovative change that will allow us to develop new services and to try and bring these numbers down. And like I said before, it means people are going to have to do things differently, and it means people are going to have to share information where previously they might not have wanted to share information at all times, obviously, maintaining confidentiality, but a lot more about collaboration rather than competition. So I want to meet with lots of leaders. I want to meet with frontline workers. I want to have conversations about how we can work better and more effectively together as a whole system throughout Glasgow. And I said recently that for me, homelessness is a public health issue. It should be treated in the same way that violence was treated within the City of Glasgow, and the establishment of the Violence Reduction Unit really looked at violence as a public health issue. And absolutely, you look at the causes and the risk factors associated with homelessness, and a huge amount is to do with public health, and it's to do with people's childhood experiences, and it's to do with poverty. So there's so many different bits feeding into homelessness, as well as the impact homelessness has on wider society. And so that means working collaboratively with lots of different providers. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm going to be hosting talking shops and we're all just going to sit around and have lovely conferences and have meetings day in, day out, etc. That's not what I'm about. You know, I'm very clear that I want to have communication, I want to develop good relationships, but I want things to be done. And a wee acronym that I won't spell out properly, but GFDI is the way that in which I want to do this in the Alliance. So that means we will exchange information, we will have conversations, I will listen to you, the Alliance leadership team will listen to you, we'll collaborate together, but we are also going to push on. And so when we've addressed something, we've spoken about it, let's crack on and do it. So there's going to be a real kind of focus for me on yes, GFDI.
Can we talk about one or two of the practical problems and solutions that we have in homelessness in Scotland? The figures came out just the other day, homelessness is rising again. It hasn't quite reached 2019's total, but it's still something like 35,000, I forget the exact figure. It's not necessarily getting any better, and in spite of the government's rapid rehousing initiatives and Housing First and all the rest of it, we're still seeing families with children in temporary accommodation for over 300 days. And apparently families with children are the people who are most likely to spend a long time in temporary accommodation. You know, why do we even use temporary accommodation for that length of time? You know, what's going wrong? What's the blockage that consigns families to spend time in bed and breakfast, which shouldn't even be being used, in cruise ships if they're refugees, and you know, in temporary accommodation, which may or may not be particularly suitable for their needs for such a long time?
Well, first and foremost, it's not acceptable. And temporary accommodation should be that. It should be temporary. So in my opinion, you know, temporary is not a year or a year and a half. So that isn't where we should be happy as a society to be, and it is a chronic issue. There's lots of reasons why things like that happen and why there's an overuse of temporary accommodation. You look at, for instance, in Edinburgh, they're bringing in restrictions in terms of Airbnb use. And so the amount of properties in the private rented sector that have become temporary or short-term lets, that has reduced the available housing stock. I think there's chronic, you know, issues there in terms of the availability of local authority housing and social housing in general. And you look back to the days of, you know, the right to buy, etc. I think that's done enormous harm to the levels of affordable housing stock within Scotland. But there are also things about the misuse of assets. There are many, many properties lying empty across Scotland. You know, we have the Empty Homes Initiative through Shelter Scotland, et cetera, that's trying to work on that. Previously at Rock Trust, it was on the Empty Spaces Coalition, which was led by Habitat for Humanity. And that was looking at the, you know, conversion of empty commercial spaces that lie empty on our high streets. How many shops do you walk past every day, and the shops with the properties above all lying empty? So some of it's about poor policy, essentially, or not allowing people to redevelop as quickly as it should be redeveloped. So there's a kind of slowness around there. I think that could be tackled in a much more efficient way to increase the levels of stock. But that's a longer term solution, and you know, that takes time to do that. And so I think temporary accommodation itself isn't going to go away, unfortunately, for a number of years, because the levels of housing stock just aren't there. And, you know, at Rock Trust, before I left, we had conversations about expanding provision into Glasgow. And one of the big blockers for us was around the availability of housing stock to actually provide certain services. And so it's a real issue for not just families, but for service providers themselves, for charities themselves. And so you're getting more and more charities taking out huge multi-million pounds loans or social investments to buy property off the open market. Local authorities are doing the same thing to try and increase the levels of housing stock. So lots of local authorities and sector, you know, sector providers are trying their very best to increase the levels of stock. I think my issue with temporary accommodation is there's a little bit of an issue around the school of thought is that it's not okay, and we shouldn't have anybody really in temporary accommodation for long periods of time. But the solution isn't forthcoming. And so we need to address the fact that we are going to have to use temporary accommodation, whether we like it or not, and whether as a society we think it's acceptable or not. So we should invest in making sure that that temporary accommodation is the most hospitable environment for families and for individuals that have to live in it for an extended period of time. You know, I think about some of the stories that I heard, or life experiences, I should say, of young people who were in temporary accommodation and the poor cooking facilities they had. You know, I had a kettle and they had to cook food through a kettle. You know, you think about the health and well-being impact of living in temporary accommodation, about the poor cooking facilities, the shared bathrooms. I mean, how on earth are you meant to survive there? How is that not going to have an impact on your mental health? How is that in any way conducive to you getting yourself into a place where you can maintain education, employment, or training opportunities and put yourself back on your feet? It doesn't. So if we're going to use temporary accommodation, local authorities and others have to invest in that temporary accommodation, make sure that it's fit for purpose and people can actually live there healthily for a period of time whilst we try and find suitable longer term accommodation. So I think there's two issues. One is availability of stock is really challenging. There needs to be a far bigger push in getting more stock, and there are solutions there like empty space conversion, etc., and empty homes, as well as new build activity. And then there's the short term thing of people are still living in temporary accommodation and families are still living in temporary accommodation for far too long, and that temporary accommodation is of very, very poor quality. And you know, you look at the figures for Glasgow, and there was over, I think it was about 300 breaches of the unsuitable accommodation order. So it's not acceptable, and there's a chronic issue with it, and there needs to be short-term investment in the quality of it as well. And then you look at things, just my final point really on this, but you've got me off on a bit of a tirade here. Things like digital access and inclusion. You know, how many temporary forms of accommodation have internet access so that people can actually apply for things like benefits and apply for jobs? It's not very many. And so we have these situations where a young person or a family or an individual can be placed into a bed and breakfast or a hostel, and they have no cooking facilities, they have no internet access, and many don't have a connected device to do that anyway. And then they're left. And why do we think that that's acceptable? So if we know that there's issues around housing stock, then why are we not investing in the temporary accommodation stock that we have at the moment and making sure it's the kind of best of a bad situation, essentially? Because at the moment, it's not. It's the worst of a bad situation, you know? And already, I'm only in 2 and a bit days, and I've already had briefings about a particular service that the Alliance pays for, and actually the standard of that accommodation is really poor, and the team are working incredibly hard with the owner of that accommodation to increase the quality of that accommodation. So we know that the standard of temp accommodation and emergency accommodation isn't good, and we're trying to work on it, but I think there needs to be far higher and far stronger focus on improvements in that area very quickly.
Let's move on to the future then. The Alliance is getting ready to develop a new strategy, a plan that it says will drive its approach, direction and priorities over the next 3 years. Who in particular are you looking forward to engaging in this and hearing the views of?
Well, lots of different people. I think everyone should be entitled. You know, this is meant to be a citywide movement of change. And so I want to hear as many diverse voices on it as possible. Clearly, people with lived experience of homelessness are, an intrinsic part of the strategy development process. The strategy has to be what's best for people. But I also want to engage with not just the Alliance leadership team, but the wider sector as well. There are so many providers of services that do amazing jobs, and the quality of their service provision is phenomenal. I want to engage with them. And we have a leader exchange forum in a couple of weeks, and that's where we'll be talking about the strategy. And I want to hear from as many leaders as possible on what they think about that. So those are kind of my main priority areas, is about just trying to reach out to as many people that have an interest or a stake in homelessness provision and ending homelessness in Glasgow, and listening to them about it. But clearly the first and foremost is making sure, and there has been and will continue to be, a real focus on people with lived experience developing that strategy and making sure that it is best for people.
I was interested in your point about treating homelessness like a public health issue. And that's become something that you see just about almost any of society's ills now, that the Glasgow Knife Initiative was so successful that it's now become a blueprint for everyone. But I'm not entirely sure how that in practice is done when you're talking about allocating houses to people, when you're talking about trying to deal with homelessness. And what does it really mean to treat it as a public health issue?
I think, homelessness is more than just housing. Homelessness is a multifaceted issue that has a number of causes to it. And so, there's so many different reports out there. It's just a well-known fact. And I'm not saying anything that anybody else doesn't know already. If you're homeless, you're far more likely to develop or have a mental health issue. If you have a mental health issue, you're far more likely to be at risk of homelessness. You then look at the reasons for homelessness, and the big reasons are things like family breakdown and relationship breakdown. It's adverse childhood experiences. It's poverty. Front and foremost at the moment with the cost of living crisis and this impending increase in utility bills. You've then got fuel poverty, like I was just saying there. There's violence, involvement in the youth and criminal justice systems. Care experienced young people far more likely to become homeless, far more likely to go off to prison. So when you start looking at homelessness, it's not just a person with no story rough sleeping. It's a multifaceted issue with a huge number of different causes. And every person that experiences homelessness has a very unique story. But you can track that story back down the line in terms of their experiences and what's caused it. And it's all those different areas usually are the reasons why homelessness occurs. You know, there's this kind of saying that, everybody's at risk of homelessness in one way or another. And some people, it's a couple of paychecks missed or something like that, and you become homeless. And whilst perhaps that's true, for most people, you have family supports in place. For most people, if you experience something like that, there's other things around you. You know, you have a certain level of resilience, or you've not had as many adversities in life. So I think it's truer to say that whilst, yes, most people might experience homelessness in life, if you have an experience in certain categories, so multiple adverse childhood experiences, care experienced, domestic violence, etc., drug and alcohol use, either yourself or parental drug and alcohol use, you're far more likely and far more at risk of becoming homeless. So then that clearly indicates that this is a public health issue. Because it's not just about the prevention, and obviously the Alliance is absolutely focused on prevention, preventing people becoming homeless. And then if they do become homeless, it's rare, brief and non-recurring. But there's the other side of it as well, which is about absolutely prevention. But if it does happen, you're rehoused and rehoused quickly into permanent accommodation and not temporary accommodation. And then you're helped to sustain that accommodation. Now, so what does sustaining that accommodation mean? Well, it depends on what you require support with. But if you have drug and alcohol issues, or if you have severe mental health issues, you're going to need support from those services to maintain your tenancy. And those are intrinsically linked. So I think people need to work together and understand that homelessness needs the involvement of a huge range of different professionals. And then you look at things like Housing First, and now Housing First is absolutely focused on, you know, housing first. Obviously, you get your permanent home, that's your home, and then it's that really simple Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If that's sorted for you, then we can start looking at other areas of your life, because usually it's not just homelessness that's causing an issue for you. There are other issues, like I've said. So that's why I say that homelessness should be treated like a public health issue, because there are multiple public health causes of homelessness. And for chronic homelessness and chronic rough sleeping, there are multiple issues that people are experiencing. And a lot of that is covered under the public health system in one way or another. And so we need to work together. And so if you just are expecting homelessness services to fix homelessness, essentially, or end homelessness, then it's going to fail, essentially, because homelessness services don't have access to the right kind of education resources, can't input into schools and preventative-based programs within schools. Homelessness services don't really employ GPs and other health practitioners, etc. Drug and alcohol services, all the rest of it. We all have to work together under a public health system to end this chronic issue.
But given that it's so hard for someone to get support for a drug problem and at the same time get support for other things in their lives, for example, a mental health problem, sometimes, you know, you get one or the other, and the people who deal with mental health won't deal with a drug problem, and, you know, you don't get that holistic service. How are you and the Alliance going to knock all these professional heads together and make them work together? Because it seems to be the labour of Hercules to do this.
Yeah, I don't think for one minute that this is going to be easy. This is going to be a slog, a hard slog. And it's not to say that people aren't willing to do things. Of course, people are willing to do things. Of course, everybody, I would hope everybody wants to deal with this issue. And you're right, it comes down to resources. And so my time at Rock Trust, we had issues accessing CAMHS, to the point where we ended up just applying for multiple different funding streams and employed a team of four therapists. And those therapists were the ones that had to deal with and support young people in those kind of crisis situations until we could get them into CAMHS, because the blooming waiting list was so long. So I completely understand your point. It's a resource issue. And when you're dependent on lots of different organisations and health institutions and public institutions to reallocate certain resources or in some way change the way in which they deliver resources, that is going to be a monumental challenge. I think for me, it's about advocating the benefits of change. You know, if people think that what they are doing is the most effective way of doing it, they're very unlikely to change. And so my job is about advocating to them that actually, if you do things in a slightly different way, or if you work with us in a different way, then it's going to be more effective. And some people, it's, you know, you can do that through advocating about the outcomes for the individual. Other people, it's about the finances at the end of it. If you do it this way and you work with us in this way, then it has a cost saving of X within 2 or 3 years. And that can be quite compelling for other organisations and individuals. So for me, it's about understanding what different organisations and individuals need to hear in order to try and convince them to come with us. And like I said about local authorities, I'm under no illusions about how difficult that's going to be, but it's not going to stop me from trying. And I think I can be quite a persuasive person. And like I said before, I'm quite persistent in terms of the way in which I'll go about it. So a lot of it's about relationship building. And, you know, one of the kind of principles of the Alliance is also being able to say things that might not be popular and to say it anyway, and to kind of almost push into that conflict. You know, what was it Brené Brown says about kind of leaning into vulnerability a wee bit and leaning into the kind of pain side of things just a wee bit. And that's what I kind of want to do as well, is not shy away from that conflict and challenge, but actually lean into it a little bit, and let's just understand why there is conflict and challenge in the first place and work through it. So that's hopefully how I'm going to do it, but I am under no illusions, as I said, about the challenges ahead, and there will be knockbacks, quite several of them, I'm sure.
I think Brené Brown calls herself a courage builder. So maybe that's a good description for you too, Kieran.
Finally, Jack, you're at the start of this journey, but if you don't achieve this stated goal of ending homelessness in Glasgow within 8 years, what else can success look like?
And I think that the thing that I need to say here is that homelessness, I think, there will always be an element of homelessness for whatever reason. Okay, and so there will be, in some situations, somebody will become homeless. And so in those situations, what we have to do is make sure that it's rare, brief, and non-recurring. And so what that essentially means is that if somebody declares themselves homeless, they're dealt with, assessed, and placed into new permanent accommodation as quickly as possible. And by quickly, I do not mean over 300 days in temporary accommodation before that happens. So I would hope that by 2030, we will absolutely be able to say that somebody who is presented as homeless is able to access their new permanent accommodation within a matter of weeks, if that, and that their experience of homelessness might be a horrendous experience, it might well be, but it's an experience that is so very short-lived, and that they have the right kind of wraparound support in place. I would really like to see the statistics, the thousands of people that are homeless, the thousands of people that are in temporary accommodation come right down by 2030. And I mean right down into the tens, not the hundreds or the thousands. But I think we have to be realistic that there is always going to be challenges. There are always going to be events that we just can't prevent through different prevention programs that we just can't foresee, etc. And in those situations, I want to make sure that they are dealt with rapidly. And you look at, obviously, rapid rehousing transition plans. It's the whole ethos behind the Scottish Government's approach. So that's where I would like to see things by 2030. We've got 8 years to achieve that. And like I said right at the start, if by 2030, I have another conversation with you guys, and it's the same service providers delivering the same services as in 2022, then I monumentally failed in my job.
Well, we wish you all the best, Jack. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Scottish Housing News podcast. My thanks to my co-host Jimmy Black and to Jack Rilley, the director of the Glasgow Alliance to End Homelessness. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.